Welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum
and Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between. All strange beasts, welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And as Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody. Hey, this isn't Matt Levine. This is Max Hannum. Welcome.
Yes, Max Hannum here. I'm on the, I guess, the main show now for this episode.
Welcome. For those of you still confused, Matt Levine has been working really hard this week reviewing movies for the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival. We'll hear from him soon about what he's seeing and recommending. There may very well be some monster-inspired movies in there. All this to say, Matt and I decided to push the Valley of Guanji back a week and take this opportunity to do something different. So Max and I are going to talk about the 2022 indie Lovecraftian horror movie called Glorious. Please rate and review Camp Kaiju wherever you listen. Go ahead and share this podcast with a friend. It's a great way to spread the word. Check out our website, campkaijumoviereviews.com. We're dropping blog reviews every week. And on patreon.com/campkaiju, there's that and a whole lot more special perks and content. We have tiers ranging from $3 a month all the way to $15 a month. So it's all very affordable. And depending on your level, you're getting a whole bunch of good content, including Frozen with Fear. And special thanks to our patrons for keeping us going. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Peggy, and our anonymous donors. And here to swing the old Gamera gong for you, Max, it is your honor tonight.
Oh, thank you. Swing this Gamera gong.
It's got a big old Gamera painted on it.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, please pick up the mallet to your left and just give us your best wind-up vocalization. And hit it.
All right, here we go.
Very fun. I'm sorry Matt had to miss it. But you know, come back anytime. Anytime you're feeling the urge.
Yeah, definitely will.
Hey, Matt. Hey, can you hear me?
Nice, there it is. My original plan was to see literally as much as possible, like more than 40 movies over these 2 weeks. And now it's like, I'm going to cut that down to like one a day, maybe, because otherwise I'm going to go insane, you know? So it'll probably be closer to like 20, 25, I'm guessing, but that's not bad. So
how much longer does it run?
Till next Thursday, one more week.
And where is it?
It's mostly at the main cinema in Minneapolis, although there are some shows at the Capri Theater, at the Landmark Center in St. Paul, and in Rochester as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I probably won't be going to any of the other ones, though. It's kind of just more convenient to stay in one place and go from one theater to the next, you know?
Yeah, of course. How about this one that you just really hated? What's that called? Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to ask me about that. I really did hate it very much. Birth/Rebirth, it's called. My least favorite of the fest so far. I know I did kind of like tear this movie apart on social media, but in my opinion, it's well deserved. It's so first of all, you know, it's like it's kind of like a riff on Frankenstein. It's about this nurse in New York City. Her daughter, 6-year-old, dies, and a pathologist in the same hospital that she works at takes the girl's corpse, and she's been doing her own. The pathologist has been doing her own experiments in reanimating dead tissue, just like Dr. Frankenstein. And, you know, she succeeds in reanimating this girl. And then the nurse finds out about it. And then she becomes sort of equally obsessed in keeping her undead daughter alive, which sounds like a promising idea. But I like, in addition to being poorly shot with bad music and bad performances and bad dialogue, I also think it's a very cruel movie. Like, you know, we see this little girl die twice, basically on screen. And in addition, like, it just kind of like really wallows in kind of brutality and misery. There's not really any humor in the movie. It does. I don't think it really adds anything at all to the Frankenstein story. You know, it's not really a clever spin on it. It's kind of just like more death and more bleakness. Yeah, there's not really anything I liked about it. So don't see that one.
Would you say it stands the test of time?
Well, time will tell, I guess. But considering it didn't even stand the test of the hour and a half that I watched it in, I kind of doubt it.
Oh, man. Oh, maybe I'll see that just for like some sort of sick curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, I know obviously you love Frankenstein very much. And so, you know, I think perhaps you should see it for that reason. But I have a feeling you will not like it very much. I could be wrong, though.
Better or worse than Flesh? No, grosser than Flesh for Frankenstein or not?
You know, you and me and Frank kind of talked about this during the recording. I think it's not as gross as Flesh for Frankenstein, but it's more disturbing than Flesh for Frankenstein. I liked Flesh for Frankenstein more. I think,
yeah,
like, historically that movie's more interesting, and I think, like, visually it's a lot more unintentionally or not, like, it's just kind of like really fascinating to look at, you know. So
yeah, and it is campy. It does have humor to it for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's original and visceral and weird. Flesh for Frankenstein is, which does not define Birth, Rebirth at all. I will say, I just want to throw this out there real quick. There's another Frankenstein homage in the festival called The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, which I've heard is very good. And that plays on Saturday night. So I'll be seeing it then. And I have high hopes for that. So we'll see how that goes.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you mind if I turn it over to you? I know, no. You, like, yesterday, did you have the conversation about Glorious with your brother yesterday?
Do you had heard of it before?
Yeah. Yep. It was on some critics' list of the best movies of 2022. It sounds really cool.
Yeah. It premiered at the Fantasia Film Festival in Montreal last year and was distributed by Shudder. It's all Lovecraftian with cosmic horror and bleak cynicism, but there's a lot of humor to it too. And there's some really well-known actors in it. Ryan Kwanten and J.K. Simmons plays he voices the god character in the bathroom stall at this rest stop. So yeah, it's a really absurd concept, but it's pulled off really well.
Yeah, I just want to see, like, how they attempt to pull it off. So I'm excited to hear your conversation and hopefully see the movie soon.
Yeah, yeah, it's worth it.
You posted about 65 recently too, which was kind of like a guilty pleasure, right?
That's a good way to describe it. I would say it's a guilty pleasure. I wanted to get into. I was inspired by the Valley of Guanji to start watching some dinosaur movies. So that 65 is a good one. I can't wait to talk about the Valley of Guanji next week.
Yeah, thank you for rescheduling. I'm sorry this festival has really got, like, it's intruded in my life entirely. But yeah, no, I'm excited to talk about it. I am going to go home tonight and watch it. I was going to see a late movie at the fest tonight, but instead I'm going to go home and watch Valley of Guanji, which I'm really looking forward to. And yeah, we'll find some time next week to talk about it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. What are you going to see next?
7 o'clock, I'm going to see a movie called The Sales Girl, which is from Myanmar, I think. Sorry, I'm looking it up real quick. Mongolia, sorry.
Wow.
It sounds really good. It's about a woman who works in a sex shop in the city of Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. So that's a world that I definitely know nothing about, you know? So I'm excited for that. I was going to see a movie tonight called Cairo Conspiracy, but that starts at 9:30. It's 2 hours long. You know, it looks pretty good, but it could be bad. So I'm going to skip that and watch Valley of Guanji instead. Tomorrow I have a triple feature planned, but I might cut that down to two. There's a documentary about coal. It's called King Coal. That's supposed to be pretty good. And then an Italian drama called The Eight Mountains that I'm very excited about. And then I can't remember what the late one is tomorrow night that I was going to see.
That is so exciting that you're doing this. And it's just very exciting. That's cool stuff.
Thank you. It is. Yeah, it's exhausting. I mean, I feel like back in my 20s, I could watch 4 or 5 movies in a day and it wasn't too much. But now it definitely is, like, feel a little brain dead by the end of the day. But it is very exciting. There's a lot of good stuff. Some of it might not get a wider release, like I said before. And yeah, like after the whole festival is over, I'm going to publish like a recap of the whole thing. So
nice.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. But this recap will probably just be on my own blog, MatthewColeLevine.com. I'm terrible at self-promoting it, but yeah, so I have that blog and I'll probably just post this piece on there.
Awesome. I am jazzed about this conversation, but I'll let you go and watch a movie.
Thank you. This was fun. I mean, I'm glad, you know, it's excited to hear the glorious recording that you did last night. And yeah, Valley of Guanji soon. It'll be cool.
Can't wait. All right. Take Indeed. Care, man.
You too. Thanks, Vincent. See ya.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
So Max is just pinch hitting here, but we're so excited to get to talk to not just a guest host on the Camp Kaiju main pod, but the co-host of the Frozen with Fear Patreon exclusive podcast series. Max, tell us about Frozen with Fear.
Well, Frozen with Fear, it was just we're going to review Antarctic movies while me and one of my shipmates were in Antarctica. I say shipmates because I work on a ship with the Coast Guard. And we just did a 5-month deployment to Antarctica. And while we were down there, it was like, hey, let's just review some Antarctic movies while we're down here. So it's a little 4-part series with all the Antarctic classics. We got AVP, we've got The Thing, 2011, and then Cold Skin,
which I hadn't heard of.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it either until my co-host for that special series, Corey, he talked to me about it, and it's kind of vaguely set in Antarctica, but I'm pretty sure it is. But it's considered like a Lovecraftian Deep One movie, newer movie, the Spanish-French co-production. It's in English, but I recommend that definitely. Even if you don't subscribe to the Patreon, go check out that movie. It's a good movie.
Couple of questions, quick. I know, but people don't know. Why is the U.S. Coast Guard in Antarctica?
But the United States has 3 research bases in Antarctica. You have McMurdo Station, which is the largest. Palmer Station, which is on the Antarctic Peninsula that's just south of South America. And then the South Pole Station, which is at the South Pole.
Oh.
Now, the military helps out with the logistics of supporting those bases. So the Antarctic Treaty actually forbids a military presence in Antarctica, with the exception of military units that directly help with sustaining research there. So the Air Force is there, the Army's there, like the Army Corps of Engineers does stuff. The Coast Guard has the only U.S. ship. Well, it's like the only U.S. military ship that's capable of breaking the ice down there.
Hmm.
The ship's name is the Polar Star. It's got a Wikipedia page if you want to look it up. Also like a Facebook page if you want to see some pictures of our last patrol. So we sail down there and then break ice for 2 months in order to create shipping channels for the 3 resupply ships that supply McMurdo Station.
Hmm.
So our job is just to break ice and also to provide rescue and assistance if any of those 3 cargo vessels encounter any problems while they're down there, because there is no help down there other than us, because there's no shipping really other than that.
Okay, you're in Antarctica, most remote place on Earth. All I'm picturing is The Thing, John Carpenter's, you know, yes, aesthetic, where it's just like a couple of buildings, nothingness. Great place for a monster movie. And you decide to watch some monster movies. Do you want to do it again next year?
I don't know.
That's fair.
Because Corey's no longer on the boat.
Oh, no.
He's transferring to a different unit this year. Although he did say he's willing to do any special episodes or whatever. He just likes talking about movies.
Okay. Well, Max, we can talk about some potential other options if we want to do a Frozen with Fear part two.
Yeah, I'd recommend even subscribing for a little bit of time. Give those a listen. I think we have a good time.
And then quit.
I mean, if you like it, then yeah, we can. Well, we'll see what we can provide you with more. But that's a good way to support the show.
Okay. Max, what is your personal history with Glorious?
It was a movie Corey recommended, and it's a Shudder original, which we should point out. It's not just any low-budget movie. It's a Shudder original, so that's probably why I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have Shudder or didn't realize I had Shudder at the time.
Is Shudder the same as Chiller?
No.
Is Chiller still a thing?
Isn't Chiller the digital horror channel?
Whatever we were watching that one summer in college.
Yeah, I think that's just a TV channel or something.
But isn't Shudder a TV channel?
No, Shudder's a streaming service.
Oh.
It's owned by AMC, so if you already subscribe to AMC, you get it. But it's a streaming service specifically for horror movies and horror-related stuff, which honestly, if you're just looking for like low budget horror movies, like that section on Netflix, and if that's all you're using Netflix for, just get Shudder because that has better content there and way more of it. Do you know how, like the Sci-Fi Channel did like original movies?
Yeah,
they probably still do. And sometimes it'd be like a horror movie or whatever. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But the modern day version. So it has better, everything's just better because you can do all the great effects a lot cheaper now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is definitely a low budget movie. Takes place in a bathroom.
It is not an easy feat to pull off.
Like they just go to a rest stop, a highway rest stop. They rent that out, and then they have a set of a bathroom because it gets covered in blood at one point. But it's still like a relatively basic set.
Mm-hmm.
You got a couple stalls, a couple urinals, a couple toilet or sinks.
Yeah,
one window that's not a real window. It's more like a grate.
So we actually should just briefly summarize what this movie is about. We're talking a lot about it. So in short, Wes is a heartbroken man driving through the country. He's very distraught in his car and he pulls over to a rest stop. And you see in the back of his car, he's got a bunch of stuff, other people's stuff. You presume he's gone through a breakup. Something of that nature. He is so distraught. He gets super drunk one night. He gets a bottle of whiskey. And right there in the...
Yeah, there's like a small little fire pit. He burns all of it in a ritualistic, like I'm throwing away the past sort of way. Drinks a whole bottle of presumably whiskey. Wakes up the next morning, completely hungover. Starts throwing up in the public restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he meets the character of Gat. It's Gat the Nanoa. They use the short for Gat, so I'm just going to say that. Mm-hmm. But that's when Gat introduces himself. And they start having a little dialogue, and then he tries to leave and realizes he can't leave the bathroom. And so then hilarity ensues.
But it's important to know that there are two stalls in this bathroom. Gat is in one of them, and Gat is communicating, by and large, through a glory hole in the stall. Yes.
That's why it's called Glorious.
That is why.
Yes. And there's like a little mural painted around the glory hole of, it's like a woman with like three boobs and then the head with of like a monster with three like serpents coming out of it. Or
it's a really great effect.
Yeah. No, it's good because it, even though we're just hearing the voice of J.K. Simmons, they kind of cut to that almost as if it's like talking. So it's, mm-hmm. It does allow for that visual connection to a character.
Yeah. Turns out that Gat is the firstborn son of Cthulhu, the all-being.
That's not what it is.
That's what, yeah, in the movie.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
Yes, not at all.
Yes.
So there's it's not Cthulhu. It's some being who like created the universe and everything.
The name Cthulhu was mentioned.
And then that being has three children. And this being also creates humans. And those three children love humans. They love life and everything. But the this god says, I don't like this stuff anymore. You're being too nice on it all. And so then the children agree, go away from humanity, like ignore it basically. But they say, Father, you have to do the same thing. And then the father agrees, but then creates a fourth child, Gat, to kind of go back on that deal and just say, hey, just go destroy humanity. So Gat is the fourth child of this.
How did we hear something so completely different?
I don't know.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I even listened to another podcast.
So here's what Wikipedia says. Gatanothoa explains that his father created him as a tool to destroy humanity. However, Gat's older siblings sealed their father away to stop him. But now the god is free, and Gat, having developed affection for humanity, has hidden itself away from its father to avoid being used to destroy the universe.
Okay, well, the jury's out on whether or not that's Cthulhu.
It's not Cthulhu.
It literally
just says a primordial god.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just telling you what I've heard from other people.
Other people are assuming too much and are wanting so hard for it to be Cthulhu.
I also feel like I heard that in the movie itself.
I did not hear the word Cthulhu mentioned.
I did.
Well, we're at an impasse, but I'm not going to die on this hill.
Me neither. We're moving on. So I just watched J.K. Simmons in Whiplash last month.
Ooh, nice.
And I feel like he was playing the same character.
He plays a similar character, or he gets used similarly in a lot of different things.
But I think his voice is so pitch perfect because he can be menacing while also being casual. He can be humorous, but then like be really violent. And it's just perfect for this movie.
It creates a tension.
Yeah, I couldn't have played that part.
No, and he does a really good job of it in Whiplash, and he does a good job here. Well, I say a good job. I'm not a fan of the beginning or the end of this movie. I'll be very clear on that. The middle I like.
BanditsEmporium.com is the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. Check out BanditsEmporium.com or hit the link in our bio to check out their selection of monster-inspired tees. Part of the proceeds goes to supporting this very show. Visit BanditsEmporium.com. Whatever your style, they have you covered. As they say, we sell shirts. As Camp Kaiju says, you say mythos, I say mythos.
Like another character comes in. He's like a property manager or something. Just coming to check on the place. Doesn't end well for him. And then Wes has to give up something for Gat to save humanity. Basically to prevent Gat from coming back into his physical form to go back into hiding so he doesn't destroy humanity. Because Gat doesn't want to destroy humanity, but he knows he's going to have to. The twist ending, which I didn't like, and then the end.
So the twist ending, spoiler alert, there's a series of flashbacks throughout the film into Wes's backstory because we get to see his burgeoning relationship with his girlfriend, who at the beginning we're led to assume that he's broken up with, or she's broken up with him.
Maybe they had lost a child.
Right, because of the teddy bear.
There's a teddy bear,
yep.
Which is a weird gift to do just between loved ones, I guess. I don't know. Like if my wife just gave me a teddy bear that said I loved you, it'd be a little weird. It's like, why are you giving me this teddy bear? But it's like, yeah, it kind of implies that there's, but it actually, no, it implies she's alive because he calls her at the beginning. So like, or maybe they had a kid or something like that. And then that creates some rocky relationship.
He called her?
Yeah, he was calling her. As soon as he got to the rest stop, he was like, I need to stop doing this. He's like calling her voicemail.
See, this is a great movie to rewatch because once you know the end, you can go back and see how it all falls together at the beginning.
It doesn't change it that much. It just, it actually shows a little bit more inconsistencies. But the twist is this grand thing wasn't that, I don't know, like there was some infidelity or whatever. It was, he's a serial killer. And she finds a box of pictures of his previous victims.
And when she does that, he realizes he just kills her then. He
just kills her.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's dumb. Because the whole movie, you are connecting with this character. And he does a great job of being like a likable guy. Like the actor's just a likable person. And he's going through time. And then at the very end, they show that scene of revealing he's like a serial killer. And the movie ends 5 minutes later.
But what's happening during that flashback to him physically in the stall with Gat?
Oh, he's Gat's taking his liver.
Yeah. So Wes has to cut out his liver to feed Gat. And Gat says, no, no, it's okay because your liver regenerates. So I only need a little bit of it.
That's also a little bit of a twist because they're kind of leading up to
yeah,
the glory hole needing to be used
right
by either Wes or the opposite of Gat using the glory hole. And then that creates a good moment of comedy in the movie when it's like, why are you putting your penis through this glory hole? Like, what did you think we were going to do right here? And then Wes is like, oh, can we just move past it? Like, what do you actually want me to do? Because they kept it vague the whole time. And yeah, it was a pretty funny lead up, like the way they built up to it.
It was done well.
But yeah, as soon as they did that twist of him being a serial killer, I immediately was like, I don't care about this guy anymore. Just die already and end the movie.
But he does save the world. And he...
I feel like it was more of a punishment.
Well, exactly. It was a good thing to grapple with where he saves the world. This serial killer saves the world. So I'm like instantly conflicted by that. But then Wes in the movie, he asks Gat, so am I a hero now?
No, I don't think he asks. He says, I'm a hero.
And Gat says, no, you're not.
Your heroes are remembered.
Legends never die. Follow your heart, kid. You'll never go wrong. But yeah, so I was left feeling with this great, like, this is one of the themes, I don't know, of cynicism, where it's like, even saving the world, arguably the greatest thing you can do, is still the most painful, abject punishment for your sins. And that's such a contrast for me.
Like, for me, it would have been more powerful of a movie if he did something bad, but it wasn't like that bad. Because they imply he was like, oh, you're having this loving relationship. You've never had that before. You got scared. And it's like, okay, maybe he got drunk and then like had a fling with somebody else. And he regrets that now, but he still hasn't like accepted that he was really wrong. And then the course of the movie, it's like him actually taking on the responsibility of that and then realizing he was in the wrong.
Yeah.
And living at the end. I feel like that's a more powerful growth.
Yeah.
This. You feel like it's going to be that way. And then it just like turns on a dime. It was like, no, this isn't him redeeming himself. This is him getting punished.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that guy deserves it. I don't care if he's saving the world.
100%. But don't you think it's interesting that Gat is a destroyer of worlds? Like, this is not a force of good. He wants to be, but he's not.
He knows his nature and they play with the duality of that.
Yeah. I think that's mirrored in Wes's character.
Yeah, he does say, is like, hey, we both of us don't belong in this beautiful world.
Right. So I like Gat as a character where he's as flawed as Wes.
Killed a lot of people.
But Gat has just that much more self-awareness and regret for his actions that Wes, well, he does show. Like, that's the whole point of the movie, I guess. He's
torn up, but he's not recognizing how terrible of a person he is because he's blaming his father for how he was raised. And Gat even has a line saying, it's like, you're always blaming somebody else for your own actions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they are trying to create that parallel between Wes and Gat of they've both killed a lot of people. Yeah, why do we like Gat? And I think it's just the fact that Gat is some otherworldly being who was created solely for destruction, where Wes, like, all humans are born in my mind like clean slate, like they're not bad. So he was at one point not a serial killer, so it's like he chose a darker path.
Yeah,
like he's on the downswing and then Gat is going up.
Yeah,
like their starting points are different.
Yeah,
it's definitely less, I don't know, I'm less forgiving for Wes.
So we keep talking about Lovecraft, and we're throwing around this adjective Lovecraftian. for our listeners who don't know, Max is a great reader of H.P. Lovecraft. How would you describe Lovecraft? What is Lovecraft? What is that aesthetic?
So Lovecraftian fiction is typically used to describe cosmic horror.
And what is cosmic horror?
So cosmic horror is more of like there are things beyond mankind's understanding. That doesn't mean we should go out and try to learn what those things are. Like, there's a reason those are beyond our understanding. And like, there's always some higher being that isn't necessarily a god. They almost get treated like gods and worshiped like gods by like cultists or whatever, usually. But it's more just like a being, like maybe a fourth dimensional being in the case of Yog-Sothoth or something. And they all got these weird names. But that cosmic aspect to it is like a lot of them are like just basically just aliens that are so beyond our understanding or concept of reality that when humans are seeking out like answers to questions that we don't know the answers to yet, like scientific purposes, or maybe they're just really into the occult, and so they're diving deeper into that aspect of the unknown. But when they do that, they come across like little glimpses of this other world, and then it usually makes them go insane because we just cannot comprehend all of that. It's also called weird fiction.
Sure.
Some of the stories kind of create more questions than answers, mm-hmm. but in a fun way, it makes you ponder things. It's like, wait, what is he describing? And he uses like, I don't know, 18th century vernacular, even though he was writing in the 1920s and 30s.
H.P. Lovecraft.
Some of the adjectives he uses, because they're old even for his time.
Oh, like Eldritch.
I mean, Eldritch, yeah, it's definitely, I feel like that's come around more because Lovecraft as a person and his fiction has gained popularity in the past, I don't know, 20 years, more than it was before. But it'd be words like yeah. Gibbous.
Well, I've heard of that. I've heard of that more than Eldritch. Is Glorious, I'm unclear, is Glorious taken from any literary source?
No. No, it's just the screenplay. It says story by Todd Rigney. So that leads me to believe no. And then it was written by Joshua Hull and David Ann McKendry, who David McKendry is the husband of the director, Rebecca McKendry.
And the monster featured in Glorious, its Lovecraftian name is Gatanathoa. Did I say that right?
Well, as the line says, or J.K. Simmons says in the movie, to get it right, you got to like hold your tongue and then say.
What is the word? The line, I forget.
Go get another or something like that. Got another one. I mean, really, if you try to do it, it doesn't quite sound like it, but they kind of fudge it a little with it to make it sound like it.
Well, it's harder to do than I thought, to hold your tongue and talk at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good way because even that aspect of it is Lovecraftian.
Yeah. This like unpronounceable.
The famous Lovecraft creation is Cthulhu.
Yeah.
And the way Lovecraft describes it being pronounced is that the human tongue can't even pronounce it. And that like the closest pronunciation you can kind of do is almost like a cough sort of thing where it's like, it's something like that.
Yeah.
So them using that sort of method of like holding the tongue to try to like pronounce words that aren't meant for human speech.
Yeah.
And like human muscles, that definitely makes it Lovecraftian. And I think that was a fun way to do it.
It's something I immediately observed with the script was this was written by people who understand Lovecraft, who know
what
they know what they're working with.
Yep. They understand that, Lovecraft was a pulp horror writer. Like some of his work is very, can be literary in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, a lot of it is also just very pulpy horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I would say it's a little bit more elevated than that just because he was really like, I don't know, breaking the mold a little bit, but still not all of his stories are doing that.
Now that, but But this, sorry, this character, Gatt, or Gatt for short, as they
we'll just say Gatt. He's referred to as Gatt, and that's J.K. Simmons' character in the...
Yeah. Is Gatt an actual character in the mythos?
No, not that I know of. And you say mythos because you're a little bit in the know.
Okay, explain.
So there's the Cthulhu mythos, which is like the world where all of Lovecraft's creations, what have you, as monsters, they all kind of inhabit this world. During Lovecraft's lifetime, he was very encouraging of other authors because some of them would write to him and be like, hey, can I use this monster element in my story? And he's like, yeah, go for it. Like, he wasn't trying to say, no, that's only mine or whatever. It was very like sharing what you have. It's like, yeah, if you want to take that idea and run with it, go for it. Someone would write a sequel to one of his stories, and then he would write a sequel to that story, and that's making cool, like a small trilogy.
Yeah.
I think Haunter in the Dark is one of such stories. But then after his death, similar things happened where authors kept writing stories with these same monsters, or to where it kind of established like this own little universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is the Cthulhu mythos.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I think it's cool.
I do too. Like, talk about a shared universe. There's so much to it. So Gatt exists then in the greater myth.
I guess now he does.
I keep saying mythos. I even listened to a podcast earlier today and the guy pronounced it mythos. But mythos,
I mean, is the mythos. I say mythos because it's like myth,
right?
But it's a Greek word that myth is probably based off of, and they probably said mythos. Is it Greek? I don't know.
It's all Greek to me.
I studied film, not literature. So
and they are mutually exclusive subjects. What are some of your not just like your favorite Lovecraftian adaptations, but if you like Glorious, what are other films described as Lovecraftian?
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, I read that on lists.
I mean, director Stuart Gordon did a couple adaptations of Lovecraft's work. He did Dreams in the Witch House for an episode of Masters of Horror.
Mm.
That was just a straight adaptation. He adapted The Shadow Over Innsmouth into Dagon.
Oh.
Which don't be confused with the Lovecraft story Dagon. So Cold Skin is Lovecraftian. It takes fish monsters that are from The Shadow Over Innsmouth, basically, called Deep Ones.
That's okay. So you reminded me, have you seen the movie Underwater?
Yes. That is Lovecraftian.
It doesn't become Lovecraftian until the end. It's a great twist that I won't spoil here, but everyone should see.
It's a staple in horror now. Like, there's been interviews with all of like the horror greats, like Stephen King is one of them, to name a few. I mean, Guillermo del Toro, even he is like the grandfather of modern horror because so many of those elements have been worked through modern horror.
Pervasive.
Yes. But we should also add, Lovecraft is a troubled figure because he's also a racist.
But like a huge racist, right?
Some of his stories are pretty racist, yeah.
Yeah.
And those aren't necessarily his good stories by any means. Like, he has stories where there aren't racist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something to be aware of.
Yeah.
So you're not just like taken out of it. Like, some of the language he uses.
Oh.
I mean, there's like a debate online on whether, like, as he was getting older, if his like racist tendencies were softening, I guess. It's debatable. He died in his early 40s of like pancreatic cancer. So he never got to like be an old man who could have written saying, I regret everything, because there's nothing that says that.
Yeah,
it's just copious letters. He's got like one of the most prolific letter writers in history. So just reading through all that, seeing him talking with other people who are more progressive, it's like, okay, you can kind of see like trends throughout his life where it's like, oh, he's more racist in this time. He's still racist, but less. So maybe he was getting less, or maybe he was just in a lull.
Yeah.
It's something to be aware of. I view it as I can enjoy the type of horror without like revering the man.
Yeah. I also want to say that I enjoy Lovecraft like as a whole. I'll read it and watch it, but what I'm not always a fan of, this is just me and my personal taste, the deep sense of hopelessness and cynicism that can come across in his work.
Yes.
And I'm like,
hopeless, terrible world, and that's another key aspect of it,
right? Like, which I understand, but it's like
we are doomed little tadpoles in a pond.
Yeah.
Like, we're insignificant.
These are not feel-good stories.
No, everyone, like, kills themselves or goes insane at the end. Like, it, that's just the MO of a Lovecraftian story.
Right.
Which, again, Glorious fits in, again.
Still. Glorious fits in. It was less despondent than, say, the recent Color Out of Space. There's a lot of humor in Glorious that I think works to its advantage.
It's not a straight adaptation of a Lovecraft story.
Yeah, makes sense.
So there's like actual comedy moments in Glorious. Like they use the editing and the music. They'll just do like a hard cut from music. Funny, and it's meant to be funny.
Right, but like the Color Out of Space with Nick Cage, I think it's a really strong movie. I think it's bold and does a lot of risk-taking. But yeah. Man, I was depressed coming out of that movie theater.
Yeah, it's more depressing. This Glorious is less depressing just because of the twist ending, which I'll just say right now, I'm not a fan of that ending.
Okay, and I'll just say for those listening, we will get into spoilers about Glorious because
yes.
I want to talk about this candidly. So it's directed by Rebecca McKendry. She doesn't have a whole lot under her belt, but
I looked at her history. I didn't see anything that I like jumped out as recognizing.
Longtime writer though for Fangoria and Blumhouse.com. So she knows horror. She knows the genre. And I think that's evident in her direction.
Yeah, she definitely knows when it's fine having some levity in the movie, because there's always that fine line of between horror and comedy. Some movies go too far in the comedic sense. Some are just like so bleak and depressing and horrifying and whatever that it's like, I feel dirty. I need to go take a shower type of feeling.
Yep.
But I think this strikes a nice blend between the two.
And the two main actors in the film are lead, our protagonist. His name is Ryan Kwanten. Ryan Kwanten plays Wes. You say you know him from True Blood. I never watched True Blood, so he was like a fresh face for me.
Right. And actually, I didn't recognize him the first time I watched it, so he seemed like a fresh face to me as well. Hmm. But the second time I watched it, it was when it was like, he's the guy from True Blood. He was a regular recurring character on that show. He was like the main character's brother.
Oh, okay.
Like Anna Paquin's character. But yeah, he just looks a lot older because I haven't seen him since True Blood and he has a beard. So it's probably why I didn't recognize him.
Okay. No one else is going to understand this, but Max right here. He, the way he was dressed, he had like this open collared button shirt. He had a scraggly beard and the shape of his face. I was like,
he looked
what?
Yes. He looked like the main character of the movie I had made. So,
yeah.
Several years ago, yeah, in college, I made a 30-minute short film. It's called The Fool. You could probably watch it on YouTube.
I think it's on YouTube, yeah.
The main actor in that, it looks so close to Ryan Kwanten's character.
Yeah.
Or just the way he's styled. Of just like same beard, a little bit disheveled, but he's got like a dress shirt on. They look very similar to begin with, but just like the styling made me think of that as well.
And there were even moments in the acting that were reminiscent.
Yeah, it's like a similar. He did a lot of like same mannerisms. Yeah. I was like, same guy. That was before I recognized him from True Blood. I was like, it can't be the same guy. He's not that old.
The guy we directed in college 10 years ago is now in Glorious. Wouldn't that be something?
It's like. I doubt it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you thought the same thing.
Yeah.
Opposite Ryan Kwanten is the one and only J.K. Simmons. He is never seen, only his voice. He voices...
It's the voice actor role.
Voice actor role. Gatan Athoa, the demigod, the god.
In a bathroom stall. Which is great effects. Like the little... Like, that was a great way to keep it, like, the budget down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, in that Lovecraftian sense, you're just getting little glimpses mm-hmm. of the horror. Like, little bulging mass of whatever, like, kind of pulsating underneath from, like, the stall. The little glowing, little tendrils coming through the cracks, things like that. And they worked it into the story as well of just, like, the main character keeps trying to look into the stall a few times, and he... This this Lovecraftian god just keeps like really messing with his mind each time. He's like, hey, don't do this. I told you not to do this. And it makes it very unpleasant for him. Like, he starts reliving bad memories or something.
I think this is something I like about the film. I like the how the script is constructed in that way. I think there's a lot of thought given to character motivation and relationship conflicts. That's really good. I just love J.K. Simmons. Like, he can do so much with his voice. And I did read that they rehearsed this movie, and that shows too. So
I think the acting was great. The effects were great, especially for their budget, and they know how to like when to use it, because they don't show everything all at once, but then they do show some stuff, and it's a really nice set of effects that they use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mixture of practical and CG. What I don't like, though, specifically the dialogue at the beginning, because it came across to me as like, we don't really know how to like get to the middle part, which is the really good part of the movie.
Mm.
That's when you start getting to all these philosophical debates and the inner turmoil of the character of Wes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do we just get the two talking?
Right.
It reminded me a lot of, I don't know, like a young writer writing, like, I don't know, those one act plays or something that I'm sure we've seen a lot of, like, in our college years or high school or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're making like weird, obvious callback, jokey things, or like, I don't know. It just felt clunky. It's passable. Yeah. Like, you get through it and it's fine because the middle part of the movie like makes up for it.
Yeah, it came off to me a little student filmy.
Yeah, that same sort of vibe of like someone who's not quite honed yet with dialogue.
I like the Gary scene. I like everything with the character, but the dialogue in that scene was really
it went back to that
unpolished. It was because he said the word hell like every other line. What the hell is this? What the hell are you doing? And it was that.
Yeah, they didn't write him a whole lot of lines. It was pretty much just, what's going on? Open this door. Why don't you open the door?
It was that classic, like, if we go back to our student film analogy, you know, this is where a seasoned writer would tell you, cut back on the swearing. You're just using swearing to overcompensate.
If you want him to ask again, like, open the door, don't use just the same exact sentence. Like, try to find creative ways to say similar things,
yeah,
or get that same point across.
Right.
Because it definitely seemed like he was just repeating himself.
Yeah.
Almost the entire time. Yeah.
And Gat keeps saying, Wes,
don't do this. You're making me do this.
It builds suspense with humor. Gat saying, I'm going to kill him. You brought this onto yourself. Wes, look what you've done.
You're a part of this now.
Yeah, Gat's great.
Another thing I didn't enjoy, which felt a little generic, again, it was at the beginning and the end, was just using that old-timey song.
Oh, yeah.
They used the old-timey during, like, the opening credits, and then they do it again for the closing credits, and it just felt very generic, and it's like, it didn't add anything. There wasn't anything thematically substantial about that song, really. It was just, like, a generic sort of uppy duet from, like, the 30s.
Right.
Or something like that. Indie horror movies have these sort of like old-timey songs in it.
Right. It was very cliche in a not great way. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have for the bad. What's like one funny part of the film or campy part that stuck out to you?
It's very played out, but they used it to a good effect of the joke of J.K. Simmons. He's about to go into like this huge speech or history or whatever. But then Wes starts peeing, and then they do like the whole back and forth of, oh, Gat starts to talk again, but then Wes starts peeing again. And it's just like that. Oh, are you done? All right, I'm going to talk. And then peeing starts. It's very clear that's what they're doing. Like, every time Gat goes to talk, like, there's this epic music, and then they just hard cut the music. And then this peeing. When I first watched that, I kind of rolled my eyes. It's like, are they really doing this right now? But the second time I watched it, it was a little bit less a little bit less of an interruption.
Yeah.
To the mood. It was more just like, all right, I mean, they're just having fun with this movie.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. It didn't take me out.
They've also did more subtle things. Where there's a part where Wes, he thinks he's escaping by going through some ventilation.
Yeah.
And he comes out back into the same bathroom without realizing it. And there's like some music that's playing, but then when he realizes he's in this same bathroom, again, hard cut music. Like, they have no qualms about just saying, oh no, this emotion's gone.
Yeah.
They're definitely using the music to be the inner emotions of the characters. And when their emotions stop, that music stops.
Yep. Immediately. Yep. There's just like a lot of little things like that. Like the fact that Wes is covered in every bodily fluid from this restroom, and he's like touching his eyes, and he's like, damn it.
Yeah, they make it a point to state he's covered in literally every bodily fluid.
Yeah.
And then by the end, he's covered in blood. So it, like, I think everything other than spit.
I love the blood, like there's a misting blood effect after Gary.
Yeah, it's like that slow motion that they started doing. Yeah. There's a moment where it's slow motion, and it was kind of beautiful.
Yeah, they knew when to use their practical effects, because I'm sure they were limited by their budget. So
yes,
they made it count, and I liked that. I appreciated that.
Although using that leg, so Gary's leg becomes a prop.
Yeah.
And he's like wailing on a door, just like whirlwinding it, trying to like knock the door. That was very like hokey. And
I was hoping there'd be more leg swinging, I guess.
They kept cutting back to that eye in the sink, and like maybe just putting the eye on the leg is like, hey, Gary.
Oh, the eye. Yeah, that was kind of gnarly. So here at Camp Kaiju, we have four ratings for our movies. Our top rating is a timeless classic. It definitely stands the test of time, or in our case, it just came out last year. It will stand the test of time. Do you think we'll go back to this 10 years from now? Our next level is there may be some antiquated moments, some dated moments, but overall it's great. It will stand the test of time. Is it may be historically significant or just fun, but it doesn't stand the test of time. And lastly, it's not worth revisiting. It definitely will not stand the test of time. Max, where do you land with Glorious?
I feel like depending on the person, it's going to stand the test of time or not. So you're either going to say, oh, it was fun, but I don't need to watch that again. Or,
yeah,
no, it was fun, and I'm going to watch that again. It's by no means a masterpiece, but I'll probably watch it again in a few years. So for me, it'll be that it's fun, not a masterpiece, but will stand the test of time.
Yeah, I think its bones are strong. I think it's executed really well. And it is not like any other horror movie, really, that is being out there. I just love the Lovecraftian genre because it is so different and you don't get enough of it. So when it's done well, hold on to it. Like, talk about it.
Yes.
I hope to see more of this stuff. Okay. All right. Thanks, Max. We really enjoyed you and appreciated you stepping in. Thanks for bringing Glorious to the podcast.
Oh, it's no problem. I had a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Come back soon. And thank you all for hanging out. If you liked what you hear, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com, Instagram, or Patreon.com/CampKaiju for more monster movie content. Can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. And before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts for part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And as Camp Kaiju says, thanks again, friends. Until next time, stay campy.
Everything all right over there, my friend?
I'm not much of a bathroom talker.
You're not in the least bit curious as to what I have to say.
I'm just not into conversations with random dudes hiding out in bathroom stalls.
No one is coming to help you.
Heroes get remembered, but legends never die. Follow your heart, kid. You never go wrong.
What have been some of your favorite ones?
My two favorites so far, well, actually, I'll say three, because there are three standouts for me. My favorite that I've seen was the one that I watched last night, Kokomo City, which is a really great documentary about Black transgender sex workers in New York City and in the Atlanta area. I'm not often a huge fan of documentaries. They either, like, I feel like they often have two big problems, which is that they pretend to be very truthful and objective, but they never are. They're always like very carefully mediated, of course, you know, as any movie is. Or they have like kind of like a bland visual style where they just kind of like point the cheap digital camera at like whoever's talking, and that's like, you know, they don't really consider the visual style any more than that. But that's not true of this movie, which is really fantastic. It's a gorgeous black and white cinematography, really great music the whole way through, and probably most importantly, the people themselves in the film are really fascinating. Just kind of you know, speak to the audience in really fascinating ways about a whole bunch of different issues, you know, their womanhood, their confidence in their own bodies, their individuality, racism, homophobia, like all across the board. But the movie's still really funny and entertaining and like very, very exciting. So, yeah, so
Cool.
that's my favorite that I've seen so far. I would say my second favorite is called Rice Boy Sleeps, which is a Canadian movie by a Korean filmmaker, Anthony Shim is his name. I don't really know very much about him. This might be his first feature, but don't quote me on that. I'm not totally sure. But yeah, it's about a woman and her son in Korea who emigrate to Canada after their husband slash father commits suicide. And it's mostly just about their attempts to assimilate to life in the West in Canada. But it's a lot more complicated than that. It just has all these like small, vivid details about adapting to life in a country outside of your own and kind of like being part of an international community, which of course I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know that experience. And it's a really, yeah, it's very moving, very poignant, beautifully shot. There's a lot of kind of like long tracking shots on 16 millimeter film. Yeah, so that's a really great movie too. That's my second favorite one that I've seen. My third favorite one is a thriller, a Spanish thriller called The Beasts. It's about a French couple who buys a very small farm in Galicia in Spain, which I think is the Northwest region. And it's a very, you know, rural area. It's a lot of farmland. Their neighbors are these kind of unhinged, sort of crazy, very violent, volatile, frequently drunk guys who have kind of like not really had any privilege, have kind of faced obstacles throughout their entire lives, and very much resent this wealthier French couple that moves in next door. And there's kind of this subplot where like the main French farmer, he refuses to sign this agreement that they're going to build wind turbines in the area, which will bring a lot more money to the community. And the Frenchman has his own reasons for doing that. He thinks it will hurt the community more than it will help it. But of course, that leads to like this huge feud between the two families, which gets really suspenseful. Like it's a really great thriller that just becomes like almost unbearably intense by the end. And you know, I'm realizing it now as I say it, those three movies are actually very different. So I'm glad that I can, you know, there's like a documentary, a sort of quiet drama, and a very intense thriller, and they're all really great.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And do those movies play at other times? Like, if I wanted to see it this weekend?
I'm not sure if they'll be this weekend, but they do. Most of them do play more than once, so at various times in the festival. Since it's already half over, I'm not totally sure if those will play again. I have the book with me. I can check real quick if you want.
I don't know. How much time do you have?
Kokomo City sadly will not be playing again. And lastly, Rice Boy Sleeps will play next Thursday at 4:10 p.m.
Cool, man.